Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
We like our beer flat as can be. We like our dogs with mustard and relish. We got a great pitcher, what's his name? Well, we can't even spell it. We don't worry about the pen as much. We just like to see the boys hit it deep. There's nothing like the view from the cheap seats.
Good morning, Acadiana. Welcome to the Tuesday edition of RP3 in Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. That's right. Got a little Alabama to start the day.
Play ball. Love it.
Now, see, that's a good baseball song.
Now, we had this discussion yesterday, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
Oh, yeah, we did a little bit.
Yes.
Is it a Tuesday edition of RP3 in Company? Because it is indeed Tuesday, or is it because it is the second edition, so it's the Tuesday edition of RP3 and Company? That's a double entendre for you. Play ball!
Just put on some Alabama and my man gets it going. That's all that we need. Another layer of Cody Schutz has been revealed to me.
Oh, I do like Cheap Seats.
It is a good song. It is a good song.
The video is hilarious. But it is the day of
the Wally Pontiff Jr. Classic. That's right. UL versus LSU down at the Shrine on Airline. We're going to talk a lot about the big game throughout the show. We're only on from 6 to 8 because Perks of the Game, Perksy, live in the studio, will be here taking it over from us at the 8 o'clock hour. But we're going to talk a lot about the Wally Pontiff Classic here. We're also going to give you some Raging Cajun softball recap from last night. We're going to talk to Tim Buckley, our good friend from the Daily Advertiser, who covers the Raging Cajuns. He's going to come up at 6:32. We're also going to talk with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast in the second hour. And, of course, we'll have a little conversation with Perksy about the Masters. And a reminder. The good brother, Ben Love, will be broadcasting bumper-to-bumper sports live today from the Shrine on Airline from 4 to 6:30. He's going to have an interview with Wally Pontiff Sr. at straight up 4 o'clock to kick off the show. He's going to lead you into pregame at 6:30 for LSU baseball, and then first pitch at 7, and you can listen to the game live right here, of course, on 103.7 The Game from 7 to 10 o'clock. Ish. So let's talk about it. It's an interesting game for both programs in this regard. Both have had some struggles. Both have had struggles with their pitching. Both have struggled at the plate. In a lot of ways, UL and LSU kind of mirror one another. Now, LSU has had the better season. They have the better overall record. Even with the series loss at Missouri over the weekend, they're still ranked in the top 25. They're down to number 14 in most of the polls. UL, even though they had those inexplicable losses during the midweek last week when they got rolled by Louisiana Tech and then lost by 3 runs to McNeese State, they still have won their last 2 series in Sun Belt play. And we'll talk more about that with Buckley about this year's team, the up and down. A lot of that has to do with injuries. They just have not been able to gel and find some consistency. Who needs this game more? I guess is a good question. Look, it's really the last significant midweek game for both teams. After this, UL only has one more, and that's against Southern Miss on the road at Hattiesburg coming up on April 23rd. The rest of their games are going to be weekend series. LSU, meanwhile, they still are going to sneak in a game against Lamar out of the Southland Conference on the 23rd. They got another game against La Tech in May, UNO in May as well. Okay, so they got a couple more midweek games to sneak in. But we're coming down the home stretch, so to speak. So who needs it more? If UL wins, it's not going to secure them a spot in a regional. We'll dive deeper into that with Tim Buckley later this hour. Because of their schedule, because of dropping an entire series at Sam Houston State and losing those midweek games that they have, they're going to have to make a run in the Sun Belt tournament. They're going to have to win out their series, and then they're going to have to make a run in the Sun Belt tournament. LSU beating UL really doesn't help them either. They're still ranked in the top 25. Despite losing to Southern last week and dropping a series to Mizzou, they still didn't drop that far down the polls. So a loss or a win really doesn't hurt them or help them, does it? What this game comes down to is that they're playing for a great cause, but it's also bragging rights. This is what it's all about, right? Especially with UL and LSU not playing in this game the next couple years, because it's going to switch over to LSU and Tulane. Overall, LSU leads the overall series 54-26. The last meeting was last year when LSU won 3-1. No, I'm sorry. I think UL won 3-1. Apologize. So, we're not for sure who's really going to be taking the mound here, because both teams have injuries to their aces. That's going to have to make them reshuffle their lineups. I mean, with LSU, Zach Hess is going to be out with a groin injury. You typically would be throwing Mikhail Hilliard here in this midweek game, but you can't because you had to use him on the weekend series, and you're probably going to have to use him in the weekend series again. So you can't throw him here on a Tuesday. UL, how do we go with that? Who's going to pitch for them? You know, LSU's been dealing with a rash of injuries. Not only the Zach Hess injury, but also Daniel Cabrera still isn't right. We noticed that in the weekend series at Mizzou. He's still coming back from an injury. Zach Watson banged up, out. Chris Reed banged up, out. Pitching staff banged up. They've had to deal with a rash of injuries, LSU does. The Advocate's reporting that when LSU takes the field versus UL tonight down there in Metairie, it's only going to have 23 healthy players on its 35-man roster. 2 days later, LSU hosts number now 25-ranked Florida, who's progressively getting better as the season moves on. The Advocate's reporting that LSU might play this week without its entire opening weekend rotation and three of its starting position players. Not only tonight's Wally Ponoff Jr. Classic, but the weekend series against Florida. Mineri said this yesterday. I've never seen so many people get hurt in one season before. Like I said, Zach Hess has a groin injury. Zach Watson strained a muscle in his groin as well. Chris Reed is dealing with a hammy. Infielder Hal Hughes got hurt but stayed in the game. Freshman pitcher Landon Marceau, who started off the season as the projected number two in the Saturday starter, did not even travel to Missouri because he again felt soreness in his shoulder. I've never seen a team have that many arms dealing with soreness before, ever, in all the years I've covered college athletics. I have no idea what the hell that's about. Never have I seen that. So many pitchers with arm soreness. Marceau will not pitch Tuesday, that is for sure. And Mineri said that he's doubtful that he'll be even available for the weekend. Freshman Jaden Hill, who's been very good for the Tigers, Mineri says, is a few weeks from pitching because of continued soreness for himself. So I don't know who's going to be taking the mound. With Hess out, LSU doesn't have a clear guy to fill his spot. Mineri said yesterday he didn't think LSU could move up starters Cole Henry and Eric Walker because they already will need to pitch on short rest against Florida because the Florida series starts Thursday. It'll be Thursday, Friday, Saturday because of Easter. It will be UL. Tony Robichaud's bunch can expect to see a lot of guys that they don't have scouting reports on. LSU is going to throw the kitchen sink. What'd you call it yesterday, Cody? What would you call the approach with throwing all the pitchers out there?
Johnny Holstaff.
Yes, I love that.
Jack Holstaff, John Holstaff, Ray Holstaff, Cody Holstaff. It doesn't really matter.
So, yeah, Watson will not play tonight. He's already been ruled out. Reed is likely not to play. Hughes may not go. If those three guys can't go, LSU will have 11 available position players, 10 of which are batting under 300. So what I'm trying to tell you is, Raging Cajun fans, now is your time. LSU fans are going to tell you, well, if you do beat us, you know, it's because we had so many injuries. You know, we only had, you know, we didn't have our best players out there. If you're a Raging Cajun fan, you don't give a damn about that. You want the dub. You want the bragging rights to say, we beat you, LSU. LSU is vulnerable. They're coming off a weekend series where they lost to Mizzou. They lost the series to Mizzou. The previous week, they lost to Southern. Now, Tony Robichaud is also 11-20, which is fairly good versus LSU, considering that LSU is the national powerhouse program. Versus LSU at neutral sites under Tony Robichaud, or Tony Robichaud is 2-8. Mineri versus UL is 11-3. At neutral sites, he's 4-1. So history is on the Tiger side. LSU is the nationally ranked ball club. They have the national championship expectations. And UL has its own litany of problems with injuries. Gunnar Leje, he's not your starter. He's not the ace of the staff. He's in the bullpen. They've had injuries to their lineup as well. They've lacked consistency. You're not 19-20 overall in 8-7 in the Sun Belt if you didn't have issues. That said, it's still a terrific matchup, in-state rivalry. UL will get a chance to flush those terrible midweek games behind them. The losses last week to La Tech and McNeese State. LSU has a chance to get back on track after losing to Southern last week and then dropping 2-3 to Mizzou. once again, in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't really matter. But, oh, it matters. It matters for the pride of all these guys. A lot of these guys played high school ball together or played against each other in travel ball. They know each other. This is a rivalry game. And it's one of the highlights of the college baseball season for us here in the state of Louisiana. Who's going to win? We'll talk more about that later. Up next, Raging Cajun softball talk right here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline if you like. 337-706-0111. Coming up at 6:32, we'll be talking with the Daily Advertiser's own Cajun beat writer, Tim Buckley. Going to be breaking down the baseball team, as well as giving us a recap from UL Spring Football. But we'll keep the Raging Cajun talk going as the softball team wrapped up another weekend series sweep at App State. They're in Boone, North Carolina. And Jerry Glasgow's bunch decided just to hang out in North Cackalack as they took on a rare early week non-conference game versus the Campbell Camels. First of all, not aware Camels were, in fact, North Carolina. I learn something new every day.
I wonder if that's, and this is totally speculation, but I wonder if it's got something to do with tobacco being a big thing in North Carolina.
I see what you did there.
Joe like Camel. I don't know. Just
some
shot
Camel
in the dark.
Cash?
Shot in the dark.
Yeah.
It was a cool camel, though. Leather jacket.
I had the sunglasses on, too. Don't forget.
Pretty cool.
There you go. UL, despite playing in windy weather conditions there in North Carolina on Monday night, they still picked up their 15th straight victory with a 3-0 win over the Camels to improve to 38-4 on the season. We've talked about this before on the show, about them switching gears and being able to develop another pitcher to give them a 1-2 punch with Summer Ellison. Summer Ellison has led the nation in victories twice this year, maybe three times. The entire nation. She's their ace. She's going to be the Sun Belt Pitcher of the Year for certainly an All-American candidate. But they needed someone else because based on what the schedule was, they were using Summer out there all the time. Well, they keep developing Kerry Boswell, and she took the mound for the Cajuns last night, and she was once again very effective. She threw 5 1/3 innings, allowing only 3 hits. Summer Ellison came in during the 6th in a relief appearance as the Camels were able to get 2 runners on, but she put out the fire quickly by striking out both batters she faced. Allison DeVille picked up the save. With the win, Boswell improves to 9-0 on the season. Look, they don't need Boswell to be Summer Ellison. Summer or Summer. But it's good to have Kerry, especially when they get to the Sun Belt Tournament and they're going to have to play all those games back to back to back. It's good having another reliable, efficient pitcher on staff. Offensively, they got things going quickly. Keely Milligan, who's had a very hot bat. She got on first, stole second, and then third. It's always great when you have a player that can get on the base paths and steal not one but two bases. It makes it so much easier for the rest of the lineup. Julie Rawls came to the plate, and her sac fly scored Keely, giving the Raging Cajuns an early 1-0 lead. Then in the third, UL executed a double steal with runners on the corners, and that gave them a 2-0 lead. And finally, the scoring. They didn't need a lot of it because Kerry and Summer were so good on the bump. Sarah Huddick singled to center with two outs to score Ariel Mass for the 3-0 lead that ended up being a 3-0 win. Milligan was the leader for the Cajuns at the plate. She had 3 hits and had the 2 steals. The Cajuns will be right back at it tonight as they're going to stay in North Carolina, as they're going to head to UNC Greensboro for, I want to say that is going to be their final, I'm sorry, their next to final non-conference game of the regular season. They have one more slated. That's going to be at Louisiana Tech coming up on April 24th. But they'll stay part of this North Carolina trip that began with the 3-game set at App State. They'll conclude it tonight when they take on UNC Greensboro on the road. First pitch is scheduled for 5 p.m. So the Raging Cajun softball team keeps it going. They just keep things rolling. And another interesting thing happened in that game. Keely Milligan, we talked about, had the multiple stolen bases. Well, yesterday, she also made news by being the 25th overall pick in the Pro Fast Pitch Draft, the USSSA Pride selected Keely with the 25th overall pick in the draft.
I'm almost quite certain that that's the same team that girls like Jenny Finch and Kat Oster something. She had a really long, it's not Osweiler, obviously. She had a really long last name as well. She was very, very, very good. This is, as a softball umpire in my younger days, I heard plenty of young girls talk about this league. Like, it may not seem like a big thing to the layperson like me or you that just, you know, oh, there's a professional fast pitch league. Who knew that? But when you are at a park in South Louisiana over the summer, and there's girls everywhere playing softball, trying to win a tournament and whatever have you, this is a big deal to them. This is what they talk about. So
because there's not, it's not like for baseball when you go to the big leagues.
It's not as mainstream, no.
Right. So congratulations to Keely for being the 25th overall pick.
And that is not the 25th overall pick. I don't care what you're talking there. That's not too shabby.
No. And, you know, she's only 5'1", dude. She is small but mighty. She's got a powerful bat, and she is a beast on the base paths. The Vidor, Texas native, doing things for the Raging Cajuns on the field and as well as being drafted. So congratulations to the Cajun softball team as well as to Keely Milligan. We're going to keep the Raging Cajun talk going here on this Tuesday edition of RP3 and Company as we welcome on Tim Buckley, the Daily Advertiser, next right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parse III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. It's time now to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline as we welcome on our next guest. He is the UL Sports Beat Reporter for the Daily Advertiser. You can follow him for the latest in Raging Cajun news at TDA Raging Cajuns. It's the one and only Tim Buckley. Tim, how are you this morning, brother?
I'm well, Raymond. Very good morning to you.
Well, Tim, I appreciate you making some time for us. I know this past weekend was a busy weekend for the Raging Cajuns. So let's start off with the spring game. It's a glorified scrimmage. The coordinators never show their full hand. They always keep something secret from us in the media and from the general public. But what are some takeaways for you from the Raging Cajun spring game that took place inside the Monclaw on Saturday?
Well, first things first, you're right, it is a glorified scrimmage. But that being said, that one in particular might have been the closest semblance to an actual game of all the spring, quote-unquote, games that I've seen. They pretty much stuck to it. Now, there were some differences, obviously, like because they were in the indoor, the punters weren't punting, and you know, little things like that. They went to a 2-minute drill at the end of each half. There was a little bonus play at the end that Billy Napier managed to sneak in to give his starting offense a chance to win it. But all in all, pretty full game, not one of these ones where they call it halfway through or whatever the case may be. Beyond that, quarterback Jayave Magale, I thought, looked really, really good. And, you know, there had been so much talk about Levi Lewis and how he was kind of settled in there. It seemed like it's the number one. But, you know, I don't know if it's now completely a situation where, you know, you got two front runners for the number one job, but it might be where you got a more definitive 1A and 1B. And with that being said, the high school kid, and I say high school kid because he should be in high school right now, except he graduated early and came here for spring ball, Clifton McDowell out of Texas, he looked really good too. And in fact, we might be saying the same thing about him if it wasn't for the fact that Magley looked as good as he did, combined with the fact that Levi Lewis struggled a bit as well, especially early on. Some of his even some of his short passes, he just wasn't connecting. He said it was everything short, intermediate, deep balls. To me, it was really the short stuff that looked like he was struggling with the most.
Well, with Tim Buckley of the Daily Advertiser. Tim, there's a story that you have posted on theadvertiser.com on pass rushing star Joe Dillon. He made such a big impact a few seasons ago. Then as a sophomore, he was kind of slowed down, and then last year he missed the entire season due to injury. How did he look during the spring game?
You know, he went about 10 plays in the first half, 10 in the second. I can't, to be totally honest with you, tell you completely how he looked, since there was about four people standing in front of me in between the sideline and the sideline table that we were working at, which was very interesting. But, you know, Billy Napier said afterward he's a little bit inconsistent. He's playing out space a little bit. So, you know, at times it seemed like maybe he was just a step slow or so. But just the mere fact that he was out there after undergoing what he experienced was amazing in and of itself. I mean, you're talking about a guy who's a year and less than a month removed from surgery to repair what essentially was a dying hip. I mean, there was no blood flow into the hip. It's the same injury that essentially ended Bo Jackson's football career. And Joe Dillon was basically told it's probably going to be the injury that ends your career too. But he said no to that and had the surgery and done all the rehab. And just to get out there was an accomplishment in and of itself. But he looks like somebody who, if he just takes maybe one more step, he could be a big help to that outside linebacking crew next season. And the other guy, one of those guys at that position, Chauncey Manack, looked just absolutely super, I thought, in the scrimmage as well. You know, that was another takeaway, certainly, that you know, they didn't have some of their key defensive linemen because Zion Hill was out and Benny Higgins was out, but I thought the linebacker group looked pretty solid across.
Tim, talk about depth has been an immense asset for this team at running back, with so many stars, Remy Calais from Cecilia High School and Elijah Mitchell from ERATH. I know they've been banged up a little bit in the last couple of years. Where do we stand with the running back depth chart?
Well, you know, people get so hung up on the whole who's the starter, who's not thing, and I'm probably as guilty of that as you are and everybody else is, but look, you got a 1A and then another 1A with Trey Regis and Elijah Mitchell, no matter how you look at it. Now, Raymond Calais is, you know, not getting as much touches as those guys. He's, you know, kind of more of a change of pace type guy, and that's just fast as all get up. But it'll probably be similar to where Mitchell and Regis get more of the touches because they're the – you know, they're the go-to guys. They're the wear-them-down guys. They're the you know, put it into the heart of the defense guys, and then all of a sudden you throw in Kyle and he pops one. You know, I think that'll probably stay similar. I think everybody kind of consider Regis more of the starter and Mitchell as the backup last season, yet it was Mitchell who ended up getting more votes from the coaches on the All-Sun Belt team compared to Regis. To me, with those two, you can't go wrong either way. They're just, all three of them, they're just different type backs.
We're on with Tim Buckley of the Daily Advertiser. Tim, let's switch to baseball. The team looked to build some momentum last week, you know, having a couple midweek games and rolling into the South Owl series. A lot of people thought they needed to take four or five heading into tonight's Wally Poniff Classic. That didn't happen. They got routed by Tech, and then they lost another game by McNeese State. They did take the weekend series, though. Your thoughts on how the baseball team is trending right now as we head into middle of April?
Well, it's struggling. I mean, every time you take one step forward, two steps back, and it was definitely two back last week with the loss to Louisiana Tech and McNeese, and then the Friday night loss as well, and then they take another, you know, another, in this case, two forward with the two weekend wins. But look, they're a struggling team right now. People don't want to hear about the injuries, but tough luck, that's a part of it. It's a huge part of it. I mean, starting left fielder is out. Your starting third baseman is out. Your guy who should be your catcher is playing more third base because of all his different injuries. Your guy who probably is your backup catcher is out now, it looks like, for the rest of the season with Sebastian Toro. You lost one of your potential starters, Tommy John surgery early in the season. That kind of stuff doesn't happen and not have an impact. It's had an impact on this team. Oh, and oh, yeah, Gunnar Leje, you know, who, as Tony Robichaud was talking about, an All-American pitcher, should be your Friday night starter, and he's not. He's pitching 3-6, maybe 9 outs in relief right now as he tries to work his pitch count back up. All that's taken a toll. They're in a situation now where RPI and all that stuff just doesn't matter. They just need to position themselves for a little bit of a run in the Sun Belt tournament to see if they can't go win the thing, because that's basically their only hope for not making it 3 years in a row without a regional appearance.
Tim, we'll wrap it up with this. Tonight they take on LSU, who's had its own share of struggles of late, especially over this past weekend when they dropped a series at Missouri after losing to Southern during their midweek contest. What do you think of this matchup with UL versus LSU down there in the Shrine on Airline for the Wally Poniff?
Well, I mean, these midweek games, you can't make anything of them other than they are what they are. I mean, even if everybody was fully healthy, they probably would not line up to throw their Friday night starter in a Tuesday night game. Now, look, things might be different if the Cajun record were such that they needed to, you know, maybe potentially get a good win against a good RPI team and have them kind of help that resume for being considered for regional, but it's not. So now you got to put all your coins into the go to the Sun Belt Conference tournament, position yourself for that pot. I mean, that's what you got to play right now. So you're not going to be starting your number one pitcher against a nationally ranked LSU team. And it's much the same for LSU. It's a midweek game. They are what they are. They're you know, when you play the Lesters, or even in the case of when you play the Cajuns, who often are a nationally ranked program themselves, but they're not now, and it's really not going to impact your rankings or your RPI or any of that other stuff. You treat it as such, and you can't overemphasize it just because of 60 miles between two schools or the fact that it's, you know, the Wally Poniff thing and all of what that implies. You just got to treat it like another midweek game.
Tim, I appreciate you making time for us as always, brother. Enjoy the game tonight down there in Metairie. Be safe, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
Sounds good. Thanks, Raymond.
That's Tim Buckley, Daily Advertiser, Raging Cajun beat writer, joining us, recapping Saturday's spring game, as well as giving us updates on the Raging Cajun baseball team, as well as their matchup tonight in the Wally Poniff Classic. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll wrap up the first hour of today's show right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parse III, right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios. Tremendous first hour about to be in the books. We previewed the Wally Poniff Jr. Classic. We recapped the Raging Cajun softball team getting another win and Keeley Milligan being drafted. And then we had a good conversation with Tim Buckley about the UL baseball team, as well as a recap from Saturday's spring game. But if you couldn't tell by the music, we're going to talk a little wrestling. A little wrestling.
Not too many superstars today are getting actual music to come to the ring.
That is true.
I mean, Triple H does come to the ring to Motorhead, so that I guess we'll count that. Joan Jett was live at WrestleMania, 60 years old and rocking, dude. It was hands down. Kid Rock has done it. Rest in peace, Lemmy from Motorhead. He's done it too. Machine Gun Kelly has done it. There have been a lot of artists that have come and done a performance live to play someone to the ring for their entrance. And Joan Jett's bad reputation for Ronda Rousey at WrestleMania this year was the best, hands down. And Machine Gun Kelly even did a John Cena entrance 1 year, and I'm putting that over this, over that. It was a very, very good entrance. Motorhead probably would have been the best, but Lemmy didn't know the words to the song. He said, it's all about the game and how you game. It's all about the game and how you game. It's all about the game and all about the game. It's all about the game. Look it up. It's at WrestleMania. He doesn't know the words to his own song. It's great. Rest in peace. Rest nice. In peace.
He lived a hard life.
What? What?
Well, no. The news, though, that came out yesterday is
making
that
national headlines.
Making national headlines from like USA Today and everyone else. Is Ronda Rousey, the UFC Hall of Famer, one of the most prolific mixed martial artists in history.
The baddest woman on the planet.
Is taking a break from WWE. Now, this is just not a storyline thing after losing the triple threat match to Becky Lynch at WrestleMania, where she gave up the belt. Rousey, the former WWE Raw Women's Champ, who was pinned by Becky there at WrestleMania 35, is taking a break from wrestling. That's because, not because they're writing her out or because the fans aren't behind her, even though fans about Rousey have been mixed, let's be honest, right?
Yeah, she's polarizing. John Cena was the same way. Half the crowd cheered him, half the crowd booed him for a long time in his career.
The thing with Ronda is she's not great on the mic. So
she got better, but she's not.
She's not great. She's not naturally charismatic. She's a fighter, right? Okay.
Which is her. That's why her bad guy character, when she turned heel towards the end of the year here, leading up to WrestleMania, it was some of her best work because she, like you said, she's a fighter. She's intense. She's, when she plays nice with people and stuff, it just doesn't come off as genuine from her. But when she turns that game face on and she's, you know, throwing the B word around at people like it's nobody's business and she's, you know, saying, I'm going to do what I want, and she's calling wrestling fake on a wrestling show and stuff, well, that's how you get heat.
You get heat. She got better as the year went along with being on the mic. The wrestling wasn't great either. And this is not a knock. It's just you could tell, look, we know this. Some of the best wrestlers out there, you don't know about them while they're developing their craft, Cody, right? They're training. Yeah. They're working at it for years. Sometimes it takes guys or girls 10 years to even get to a point where you could recognize them. And that's a decade of training and technique in how to fall and how to pin someone and how to work on the mic. She didn't have any of that. She came from, what, being jiu-jitsu to UFC. She did some movies, and people are like, well, she did some movies. No, just because you recite some lines on set doesn't mean that you can do everything that needs to be done in wrestling.
I will say this, though. She has been dubbed by, I guess, whatever the wrestling community, whatever you want to call them, She has been dubbed the second fastest person to pick up professional wrestling in the history of behind Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle is the number one guy on
that's a good comparison.
Just about everybody's list of somebody who had a wrestling background but was by no means a professional wrestler.
And his wrestling is far different.
Right, amateur and Roman Greco, whatever you want to call it.
Olympic wrestling is far different.
But he came into WWE and, I mean, picked it up immediately from all the stories everybody says he's, you know, was in it and one of the best in under a year. Ronda Rousey, no one's tried to go out and say she's done better than Kurt Angle in her first year, but she has picked it up very quickly, and the biggest way to know that is that all of her matches, maybe not the best on any of the cards she was on, but very entertaining, and she didn't hurt anyone. I think that's the big key. She was safe hands in the ring, and for a combat sport, quote-unquote, that is wrestling, where, yeah, people do get seriously injured. For someone to come in and in her first year be as main event status as she was, wrestle as many matches as she did, and to not hurt anyone, and to still be entertaining, that's because Randy Orton doesn't hurt people either, but sometimes his matches are boring.
Right.
Ronda Rousey was able to be entertaining and still not hurt anyone. And I don't even know if we said it, but you say the reason she's
The reason is not because of a storyline. She's leaving. She's taking a break from WWE because she wants to start a family with her husband, UFC heavyweight fighter Travis Brown.
Friend of the famous CD.
That is correct. She posted a picture of her kissing with her husband on Instagram with the hashtag, I'm pregnant on vacation.
Good for her. This works out perfectly as the wrestling fan here. I love that she's going to go, you know, do her thing. A lot of women do that. You have to. You have to take time away to start your family, and that's good for her to prioritize what she wants to do. What's cool is that in storyline, because Ronda Rousey was a bad guy when she lost, this makes perfect sense. Because what did she do in UFC when she lost? She disappeared. You didn't hear from her for a long time. It plays right into the storyline. Ronda Rousey is not upset like she was when she lost in the UFC. But she can go away. We don't have to hear from her. They're not going to discuss on Monday Night Raw that Ronda Rousey's trying to start her family. They're going to just not mention her. She's disappeared. She's gone. So it works in storyline, and she gets to go do what she wants to do. I think it's a win-win for everybody.
Also, in congratulations to her for her trying to start a family, we wish her nothing but the best. But WWE doesn't need her.
Not now. No, they don't. Not now.
The rise of Becky Lynch.
That might be that's somewhat thanks to Ronda Rousey.
But I also think that caught the company off guard.
Oh, yeah.
I think that did, where all of a sudden you saw this groundswell of support for Becky Lynch. And I think they realized, and they're like, oh, we have something organically that's just grown. We're not forcing it. They forced Rousey, right? They were like, oh, we're pushing Rousey.
Nia Jax punched Becky Lynch in the face, shoot punch. It was an accident. But she hit her in the face, and Becky Lynch's face was covered in blood at the end of one episode, and the fans can get behind that. Austin, that's all it takes.
Turned on a dime. First hour in the books coming up. More Wally Pontiff Jr. Classic Talk right here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station. 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome to the second hour of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing.
You know what this music gets me feeling, and especially this week, with it being Easter week and all that, right? I don't know what your plans are, but I've got two crawfish boils in my
man's got two
this weekend. And every time we hit the intro now, and I hear a little Chubby Carrier playing us into the show, I get hype, and I'm super excited for some crawfish, some mud bugs this weekend, man. Two times. Another one, as D. DJ, another DJ one Khaled says. Would say.
Another one. That's right.
You know, you know who hosted the Kids' Choice Awards this year on their Nickelodeon? No, you have for you. You may have watched. Did you watch?
No.
No? Okay, I did. John Cena has been known to host the Kids' Choice Awards, so Kason was all like, who is it this year? Who is it this year? And it was the man with the keys, DJ Khaled. We the best. Another one.
A man has made an entire career of just saying three sayings.
No, he's got another one. Congratulations. You just played yourself. I know you, that meme is everywhere. Congratulations.
No.
There was who was it? I believe it was Brody Miller. Maybe put it out on Twitter. It was the opening weekend of LSU baseball, or maybe not opening, but it was one of the beginning weekends, and it was LSU baseball at Twitter had tweeted out, oh, it should be beautiful weather at the box, da 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 da. And then like 30 minutes later, the tarp was on the field, and it was raining, and Brody Miller quotes the account with the gift from DJ Khaled, like, congratulations, you played yourself.
I love it. I love it. We led off the first hour talking about the Wally Pontiff Jr. Classic. Talked more about it from an LSU perspective. So I want to flip it, talk a little bit more from that Raging Cajuns perspective. Once again, the Raging Cajuns are 19-20 overall, 8-7 in Sun Belt play. And, you know, they have won two series back-to-back here, weekend series. Took 2 or 3 out of Arkansas State. Took 2 or 3 against South Alabama back-to-back weekends. In both occasions, they dropped the first game and were able to rally to take those series. But they do have the two midweek disappointments at La Tech, McNeese State. But a big contributor for them this year, and look, it's been an up-and-down year. They've dealt with injuries for sure, okay? Gunnar Leje being injured is a tremendous blow for this team, that they were really counting on him being able to step up and anchor that staff, and they just haven't had it. You know, they just have not had – they've not had him be able to do what they've needed him to do. That said, Jack Burke has performed fairly well for this team. Now, this is a guy that's been with the program for a couple years, okay? And – you know, he's 2-4 back in 2017. Then he was 3-6 last year. This year, he's been better. 1-0-1. He's been a big guy for them. Started off the year coming out the pen, right? But lately, he's stepped up and has ate up a lot more innings for them, the redshirt sophomore right-hander, where he pitched 6 innings against South Al, 5 against at Troy, and 4 against Tulane. So his last 3 appearances, he's gone 4, 5, and 6. Tony Robichaux, longtime head coach, well, terrific head coach, both at McNeese and, of course, with the Raging Cajuns, talked about how valuable Jack Burke was, in particularly this past weekend against South Al.
We look like we're better hitters and score more in the middle innings, but you got to have starting pitching to score in the middle innings, because if you get too behind too early, then the middle innings mean nothing. So, again, it all predicated with Jack. He came out and set a great tempo, came off of, you know, being sick, and I mean, he had it bad for a good 5 days. I mean, he wasn't even out here, and had a hard time keeping food down, and I don't even know if he bullpen leading into this. I mean, so to go out there and give us 83, 90 pitches like that was really big.
That's Tony Robichaux following the weekend series win over South Al. Another player that stepped up at the plate, we've talked a lot about Hayden Cantrell. He's having a terrific season as he enters tonight's Wally Pontiff Classic, the former Terlings Catholic star, batting .326, which is second best on the team. He has the most hits of anyone on the team with 47. He's second on the team in RBIs with 22. He's having a tremendous year, all Sun Belt Conference type of season for Hayden Cantrell. Todd Lott leads the team in batting average with .328. They're getting some great production. Hanson Monica has been well. He leads the team in 9 home runs. Oren Vaughn has 8 home runs. Hayden has 8 home runs. Those guys have stepped up and have played well for this team. But the guy that I feel is finally living up to his potential is Brennan Breaux. This is a young man who helps STM win a state championship, went to LSU, had great aspirations and expectations placed on him, as did O'Neill Lockridge. Both of those were STM teammates that went to LSU. They went to LSU the same time Antoine Duplantis did, the former Lafayette High star. And Breaux struggled at LSU, transferred to UL, and struggled admittedly last year. He wasn't great last year. He saw very limited playing time and did not really make all that much of an impact. But this year, he's done well. He's batting .280 on the year. Okay? He has a little bit of pop, 2 home runs, 20 RBIs. But he's drawn 26 walks. He's disciplined at the plate. And he's been all around a great asset for this year's team. And Tony talked about that as well on Sunday.
You know, him looked the big throw out in right field. You know, when Oren came in to compliment that, our original goal with Bourgeois healthy or LaHare healthy, we felt, man, we're going to cover some ground this year with those three guys out there. And then, of course, we lost Bourgeois, and then we lost LaHare with his labrum for a while, had to come into first base. So that played even bigger with Breaux. Plus, he covers up Todd. He helps us with Todd because we've got to keep Todd in the lineup. And if the Spears is hot, or a Monica's hot, and then McKinnon's going good, then we need the DH spot. And so a lot has to go out the left field. So when you put a defender out in left that's a little limited, the next thing you want is somebody next to him that can cover him up. And Brennan's been able to do that. Plus, he throws well from the outfield. It's really helped us because, to me, all great teams have one thing: great shortstop, great catcher, and a great center fielder. And his defensive, and then he came out of the chute swinging the bat for us too. And so his defense has always been a little bit ahead of his hitting, and he got going really good for us. And I think as we get going again, he'll be one of the guys that'll finish up strong as a hitter. But he's been a plus for us in that outfield.
Another guy that has performed very well, as I mentioned before, is Todd Lott. He leads the team in batting with .328. Now, he hasn't had as many at-bats as everyone else. I mean, Hayden, Cantrell, Hunter, Brennan Breaux, Handsome, all those guys have 141 at-bats or more on the team. Todd Lott only has 116. He's played in 38 games, but he's only started 33. And his progression to being one of the best hitters on the team, like I said, leads the team in average, second, tied for third on the team in RBIs. He already has 4 home runs. He's slugging .483. His progression as the season has progressed and his progression as a player for the Raging Cajuns has been impressive, and Tony talked about that as well.
Well, you know, he went out to the Cape and hit. And I think his whole progression comes from one thing. It's the interview they did last year when he was struggling, when he said, "It's me." I mean, that's when you get good at anything you can do, is when you don't look left and right, grab low-hanging fruit, blame it on a coach, you know, blame it on somebody, blame it on the hitting coach. When you start to blame, you lose the power over your life. And that's all people that struggle, that blame, they don't understand, they lose the power of their life. When you admit to something, you regain back the power over your life. And when he did that interview and didn't say it was the hitting coach and I'm not playing enough, and he said it's me, that's huge, you know. And then he went out this summer, he went play instead of pout, and he put up good numbers, and he had a chance to transfer, and he called back and said, I'm coming back. And we didn't know. I mean, you know, he had a chance to walk out, and he said, "I'm coming back." And man, when you fess up to something and you got the wherewithal to say it's me, he put it on him and then said, "I'm coming back." That's why he's successful. That's how you get successful in life. You don't blame it on people and cut bait and run, man. You admit to it, you fess up to it, and you come back and you fight through it. And that's what he did. So he gets the credit.
Right there. You heard it.
That's high praise.
High praise, especially from a guy like Tony. Right? Because
we know how much he cares about more than what happens between the lines on the field.
Right. And he demands a lot from his guys. He does. Not only physically, but also mentally. His whole thing, if you ever had a five-minute conversation with Tony Robichaux, is he wants, his job is to turn these young boys into men. And sometimes that means giving them some tough love and having them have to own things and have to own their own mistakes. So, high praise from Tony there on Todd Lott. So, look, we've said this before. The Cajuns have talented guys on this roster. Pitching has been the thing that's been kind of their bugaboo. They were expecting Gunnar Leger to be a force, and it just didn't happen. So he's been in the bullpen. Jacob Schultz has pitched well. He's started 7 games. He has a win-loss record of 0-1. ERA of 3.28. Austin Perrin has been 3-4 overall with an ERA of north of 4, almost 5. 8 starts and 9 appearances. You know, if they can solidify their pitching rotation, but is it too late in the season to do that? I don't know. You know, if you can get something from Jacob and Austin.
Could it be a better late than never type thing, right? I mean,
right?
To solidify now is better than to not. And we are starting to, I understand there's still multiple weekend series left before the end of the season and postseason play, but we're closer to the part of the season where your rotation is going to start being kind of thrown into disarray as it is anyway, as opposed to the beginning of the season where you can look ahead and see 2 months of, you know, you can almost map out who's going to start what game if you can get the consistency out of them. Now, with the conference tournaments not far away, and then, you know, the Cajuns can make it to a regional if they do that. When you get to those weekends, your rotation begins to get kind of out of whack because you're going to play multiple games in back-to-back days, and it's just going to be tougher. So you need as many guys playing at the top of their game on the mound right now as possible because you just never know how many games it's going to take for you to get to where you want to be.
But here's the thing about that rotation. Jacob Schultz, losing record. Austin Perrin, losing record. Gunnar Leger, losing record. Brandon Young, losing record. Michael Lamont, losing record. Caleb Armstrong, losing record. They only have 3 guys with a winning record that's part of that rotation. I mean, part of that entire pitching staff. Connor Cook is 3-0. He's appeared in 13 games, no starts. He's got his wins in relief. He also has an ERA of 6.92. Blake Schultz is 3-1. He's appeared in 9 games. He's had a couple of starts. His ERA is 7.56. The Raging Cajuns' ERA is 4.67. So if they can get that pitching staff to improve, what, Cody? Even shed the team ERA by bring it closer to 4 than it is to 5, that can make all the difference in the world. So we'll see. We'll see if the Raging Cajuns can get things going tonight in the Wally Poneff Jr. Classic. Once again, reminder, the good brother Ben Love will be broadcasting live from the Shrine on Airline for his show, Bumper to Bumper Sports, from 4 to 6:30. He's going to have an interview with Wally Poneff Sr. at straight up 4 o'clock. He's going to lead you into pregame show by LSU Baseball at 6:30. First pitch of the Wally Poneff Jr. Classic can be heard right here live on 103.7 The Game starting at 7 p.m. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we got some safety to talk about with Jeff Morrison of Louisiana Dig 811. Right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parsha III, right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Right now, we're going to head out to the ARTCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on Jeff Morrison. He is the Louisiana One Call Damage Prevention Coordinator. April has been proclaimed by Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards as Safe Digging Month here in the state of Louisiana, and we're proud to bring on Jeff to talk about that. Jeff, how are you this morning, brother?
I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day in Lafayette, isn't it?
That it is, friend. That is, my friend. Now, let's talk a little bit about, I know Louisiana One Call 811 is so important, but the governor decided to proclaim this month as Safe Digging Month. How long has that been going on? And how important is that to have the governor do that?
That's been a number of years, and it really helps. It helps us get some horsepower behind the thought of safety, the call before you dig. And we are just at Louisiana One Call so pleased to be able to partner with your station, KWLE, here in Lafayette, to get the message out, to heighten the awareness of safety. You may have seen our billboards on 49 coming into town, but we're just at One Call ricocheting across the state everywhere, trying to get the message of safety, to call before you dig, out to the general public.
Jeff, tell me a little bit about, you know, how important is it? I know a lot of folks think, when they think about safe digging, they think about, well, you know, if I'm going to put in some new drainage pipe out there in the front of my property, that's when I have to call because it's going to be by the road. That they have this misconception. It can be simple, something as simple as digging for a pool or a garden. Can you elaborate on that?
It certainly can. You know, we talked to a number of professional groups, professional excavators, as well as homeowners. And what we tell the homeowners, if you have a shovel, if you have a rake, if you have a hoe in your tool shed, you're an excavator. You are an excavator, and you could possibly damage a buried utility line somewhere in your yard or on your property that not only could put out a number of customers in the area, but it could bring personal injury to you. You know, in the state of Louisiana, we've got about 85,000 miles of nothing but pipelines buried. I mean, this ground in Louisiana is saturated with underground lines, and no one has x-ray vision, so the law is so good to us in that it requires any excavator, whether homeowner or commercial, to give us a call, give us 2 business days in advance notice before you do any type of excavating. And then we'll notify any one of our 1,160 member companies, the phone companies, the water companies, the gas companies, and then they will in turn come out and either mark the facilities in color-coded paint or let the excavator know where they were so that excavator can go about his work safely without having any injury to himself or damage any of our members' utility lines.
We're talking with Jeff Morrison. He's the Louisiana One Call Damage Prevention Coordinator. April is Safe Digging Month. That's been proclaimed by Governor John Bel Edwards. Jeff, tell me a little bit. You kind of hinted at it. You know, there's significant fines. You can also knock out the power or gas or water or whatever it may be for your neighborhood, or maybe a main street in a downtown area, regardless of where you're at. Talk a little bit about the personal injury that could occur as well for the listeners.
Well, we saw in the news, I believe, in North Carolina just early last week, there was a fatality and 19 or 20 workers injured when a contractor was boring under a sidewalk and hit a gas line. And, you know, the gas lines are dangerous, the electric lines are dangerous, but you think about things like water lines and phone lines, and you think that they may not be dangerous, but that phone line that you knock out might knock out a cell tower. Now, someone in the country doesn't have 911 service, so that can be a real emergency. You knock out a water line, we don't have fire protection because the hydrants have gone down. So every underground utility infrastructure line that's in the ground is important, very important to someone at the end who uses the service. But not only that, again, you, the excavator, you could be electrocuted if you hit an electric line. You could be injured or burned or blown up if you hit a gas line. And so, you know, the law requires that the excavators to do, but the neat thing about it, it's a free service. It costs the excavator, commercial, residential, regardless. It's absolutely free for them. It's a simple 811 call. We will give you a mark by time. That's when you can safely go to work. It's 2 business days out. You don't have to worry about doing the math. We'll tell you when that mark by time is. It will always be at 7 o'clock in the morning, Monday through Friday, excluding holidays. And here in Louisiana, once you call and you obtain that ticket, you can dig on that ticket for up to 20 days or until the marks are destroyed by the work. So it's one of the best one-call systems across the nation. You see, each state has its own one-call center because the state laws are different. That's what's so unique and so fine-tuned to the law that we have here with Louisiana One Call in the state of Louisiana.
Jeff, let's wrap it up with this. I know you say it's so easy. I just call 811. It's very easy, but there's also, you guys have a tremendous website that people can go and get additional information from and also set up appointments as well with that. Tell the people what that is and what they can get on the website.
LouisianaOneCall.com is the easiest website to find, and that is one of the best tools that you can go to look at the Louisiana law. Again, the law is different in each state. Look at the Louisiana law and see it's exactly what's required of not only the excavator, but of the utility owner-operator when they're required to mark it. Number two, you can use the web page to put your tickets in. You can dial 811 the old-fashioned way. Golly, we receive about 80% of our incoming requests via the Internet, and we get about a half a million a year. So it's a busy organization, but it's all for safety. You know, our mission is to protect the public. It's to protect the facilities of our members, but the bottom line is we want anyone who excavates to go home safely at the end of the day because they've complied with the simple call 811 before you dig.
Jeff, appreciate you coming on, making some time for us, brother. Keep up the good work, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you again. Have a good day.
That was Jeff Morrison, Louisiana One Call Damage Prevention Coordinator, telling us all about calling 811, why is it so important, and that the fact that April is, in fact, Safe Digging Month. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, right here on 103.7 The Game, we'll be talking to Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roof. It's time now for us to head back out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline for our third and final guest of the day. He is the man behind the Saints Happy Hour podcast. He's our good friend, our weekly guest, the one and only Andrew Juge. Andrew, how are you this morning, brother?
Yeah, I'm doing great, Raymond. Thanks for having me on, as always. And, yeah, we got some news today a little bit that the schedule will be announced tomorrow evening. So looking forward to that and kind of getting the calendar going and knowing when the Saints are playing and against who.
That's right. We already had the preseason schedule come out last week, right? Late last week. We already know what those four games are going to be for the Saints. But the regular season schedule will be announced tomorrow. Let's start there, Andrew. Any possibility that the Saints are going to start off the season with the Rams?
Well, it's possible. That would be an away game. It's certainly, I would say, in play to be a possibility. I think they'll want to save it for a Sunday night or a Monday night game further down the road. Because the season is opening with Packers and Bears, which is kind of an anomaly because normally it's always a Super Bowl champion that plays that Thursday night. They're going to push back the Patriots to Sunday night. So I think based on that, it's unlikely that they would use a game that kind of has the stock and equity of a Saints-Rams the first week of the season. So, it's kind of wide open, I would say, in terms of who the Saints play and when. But you look at it, it would be great to start the year at home, ideally. And if I'm looking at all these teams on the schedule, obviously the Arizona Cardinals feel like the most winnable game. So that would be my ideal choice to start the season as easy as possible, but we'll see where it goes.
Andrew, let's talk a little bit about, there's a terrific article up right now talking about Thomas Morstead. And when we think of some of the best late-round picks in Saints history, Marcus Colston springs to mind, right? He was the sixth-round pick and ended up being the franchise's all-time leader in one of the best receivers in franchise history. You could make an argument, though, that Thomas Morstead may go down, who was a fifth-round pick, as one of the great late-round picks in Saints history as well. Would you make that argument that he is, in fact, that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, first of all, I mean, it depends on how far back you want to go in history. You know, the NFL draft is now 7 rounds, and, you know, when I was a kid, it was 12 rounds, and before that, it used to be 17 rounds. So, you know, there's a lot of history. I remember Danny Abramowitz, who's one of the best receivers in Saints history, was a 17th-round pick. So, you know, they've got some gems there, you know, over the course of team history. But, you know, when you look in the modern-day era, and especially that pick in particular, when you trade up for a fifth-round pick and you end up getting a punter, I just remember the feedback that I was getting back in that time. I was blogging for Saints Nation, and, you know, the feedback that I was getting was just people were incredulous. They were shocked that the Saints would do that. How could they pick a punter that early? You know, you could pick a punter up off on the street. Why would you ever use a draft pick for that? And so people were angry, and fans didn't really understand. And, man, if you look at it now, I mean, I don't know that I would give up a first pick for Morstead, knowing what he's become, but I would certainly give up a second-round pick. And so you look at the value, if you look at the value that pick provided, I think his production was worthy of a second-round pick easily. And you know, he gets picked in the fifth. So, yeah, absolutely, one of the best picks in Saints history. I mean, you know, if you look at the Sean Payton era, certainly – Jari Evans, you mentioned Colston, who was a 7th-round pick, and Zach Strees was in that same draft as a 7th-round pick. But Jari Evans is a 4th-round pick. I mean, he's a guy that is a Saints Hall of Famer, first ballot, and maybe has a outside chance at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So to get a guy like that in the 4th round is just crazy. I mean, Carl Nix was a tremendous offensive lineman for the Saints. He was picked in the 5th round, but you know, Morstead's got the longevity now. Not only is he captain and he means as much off the field as he does on it, but you know, his production, he really is one of the best punters in the league, and you can make the argument that he's probably top 10 all time.
Well, I'm with Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, you mentioned Jari Evans, 4th-round guy. There's been so many great guys. We had a caller actually call in during the segment, Andrew. We have to give him some love. His name is Raymond. I'm just not giving him love because his name is Raymond either. Okay. But he called in and said, you know, Morton Anderson was a 4th-round pick as well. So that's another, you know, they've had a litany of guys that have been in the 4th, 5th, and 6th round that have been some steals. But, look, any successful franchise has to do that, right? You have to be good at drafting in the late rounds, in those mid to late rounds, because those are the guys that are going to fill up your roster. And those are the guys that you have a chance to develop and can be key contributors, whether they're special teams or just backups that develop into starters. The teams that are the best in the NFL do a great job of drafting in the mid to late rounds.
Absolutely. No, it's well said. And I think as you're building out your roster and trying to find depth and trying to find guys that can help your team, you know, there's luck involved, no doubt about it. I mean, first of all, injuries play into it, and so you're hoping to get guys that are healthy. Some guys drop down the draft because of their injury history, and then maybe you get lucky and they start to develop a string of health and you benefit from that. So you have to build your roster through the draft and get good depth. But I think it's so important in this day and age, and one thing I think the Saints have done a really good job of, and especially in the last 3 years, is they've added Jeff Ireland and they've kind of retooled their scouting department. It's critical to understand what your needs are and understand the profile of the player. So I think it really starts with understanding yourself, your needs, your system, your style, and kind of identifying the traits that you would want in a player. And you hear Sean Payton talk about this all the time. But what's the fit? What does this player have, and how is this going to benefit us as a team? And so I think it's a lot less about individual players and what they can do overall, and it's a lot more about personal fit, both in terms of their on-field play, but also their fit in the locker room. And so, you know, I think the main thing that Sean Payton keeps going back to is the profile player they really want is a guy that learns quickly, that loves the game, that loves football, that's committed to playing football, and that's tough. You know, those are kind of three non-negotiables that they always look for. You know, if the player is very intelligent, that's a huge plus too. So I think that's what the Saints are looking for, and you know, that served them well these last few years, and I think they'll continue to look for draft picks. They kind of have those types of things and talents.
Andrew, let's talk a little bit about a move that was made with a former Saint leaving to go play for a division rival. That was Tyler Davison. He signed a free agent contract with division rival Atlanta. Look, these things happen. When they brought in the guy from New England, you thought that would probably be pretty much the end of that. You would hope they'd bring Davison back, but they got a guy that they feel that can be as a replacement. But my favorite thing about this move, and I'll ask you your thoughts on him leaving to Atlanta and how much of a blow that is, but this was what Cam Jordan had to say. He said, "My guy, TD, not returning hurts. He gave his all every time he hit the field. Free agency sucks sometimes, especially losing him to that red and black team." He didn't even refer to the Falcons as the Falcons. Tell me your thoughts on how much of a blow that is for them losing him, and how impressed are you that Cam Jordan refuses to mention the Falcons by name?
Well, first of all, it's very on brand with our conversation today. Tyler Davison was a fifth-round pick, and he was a terrific pick for the Saints. I think, you know, when you said it, you know, when you pick a guy in the fifth round, it's very unlikely. I mean, you're not trying to pick a Hall of Famer. You're not trying to pick a guy that's going to be a perennial Pro Bowler. What you're hoping you get out of a fifth-round pick is a productive guy that is going to have a role and be able to fill it. And that's absolutely what Tyler Davison was. He was an excellent run stopper, very durable. He played through injuries. He played 61 games for the Saints, and I thought he was a productive player. And when you look at the Saints for a large part of last year being number one defense in the NFL, number one in against the run, Davison was a huge part of that. He's a big reason why. He was their nose tackle plug that was able to eat space and kind of be a big part of that. So it hurts to lose him. I agree, and I think he's the guy where, I mean, I think anytime you pick a guy in the fifth round and he has kind of four productive years for you becoming a starter, I think ideally you try to keep guys like that. And so it's disappointing to see him go, and for him to go to the Falcons in particular, it's disheartening. Now, you know, Malcolm Brown was brought in because of his versatility, and I think Malcolm Brown is a great player, and what he offers you is not only what Tyler Davison does in terms of space eating and stopping the run, but I think he gives you a little bit extra pass rushing. So I think Malcolm Brown's a more polished and well-rounded player. Nothing against Tyler Davison, who I liked very much, but I think it's an upgrade. And so I think when the Saints made that move, yes, the writing was on the wall. Now, for him to go to the Falcons, of all places, obviously that's the last destination you want to see him go. And now the Saints will have to play him twice a year. I love the fact that Cam Jordan is being petty and won't refer to the Falcons by their team name. You know, and I think that's a big reason why Jordan is so loved by the community and by the fans. You know, he gets it. He understands the rivalry, and I think he throws a little fuel to the fire there. And so I'm sure it's all in good fun, but that at the end of the day, he's very connected and plugged into what the fans want to hear, and he's giving fans what they want. So I love it, and you know, I think it'll make for an interesting storyline down the road as the Saints play the Falcons.
Andrew, one last question before we let you go, brother. Mel Kiper Jr. of ESPN has done his mock draft, and in it, he has the Saints selecting Ohio State wide receiver Paris Campbell as their only selection in the first four rounds. What do you think about that mock? I know it's a silly practice, and a lot of things could happen. They could trade Andrus Peat and possibly get some picks as well, and they may have more than just the one pick in the first four rounds next week. But could you see them taking another wide receiver here in the second round?
Well, the Saints taking an Ohio State player, imagine that.
yeah, they do love those so, Buckeyes, yeah. Man.
Yeah, exactly. So I could absolutely see it. I like him a lot. I'd be surprised if he fell to the Saints at 62. They may have to move up if they end up wanting Campbell. But if he was there, that's absolutely a guy that I would be in favor of. And I really don't think the Saints have to draft for position here. I really think the Saints are going to have to draft the best player available. Their starters are pretty much set across the roster right now. I feel like there's no one that they're going to draft, especially outside of the first round, that's going to come in and be a starter for them. So they're drafting for depth. And so you don't have to force the position. And receiver is certainly a place where I could see them needing some help. And Campbell's the kind of guy that he's got the track speed. So, Ted Ginn is getting older. He's a guy that could be his eventual replacement in terms of stretching a defense. He absolutely crushed the combine. He was a guy that I remember watching him, and he was A+ in all the testing methods and measurements. So, that has raised his stock, I think. And he's a little bit on the smaller side, but I think if there's a place where the Saints kind of need something, it's at that slot receiver position. And when you look at his speed, he is a guy that I think, with a little time, could be very successful in this offense. So that would be an exciting pickup. If that was the guy they end up getting in the second round, I would be in favor of it.
Andrew, appreciate you making time for us as always, brother. Great insight. And look, man, we'll talk to you next week. It'll be all draft preview stuff next week, but enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll talk to you then, my friend.
That sounds good. Thanks for having me.
Andrew Juge of the Saints Happy Hour podcast, breaking down the Who Dats for us. When we come back, we will wrap up this edition of RP3 in Company with the Cajun Kiwi himself, Craig Perks, live in the studio right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I am your host, Raymond Parse III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. I want to thank all of our guests today for coming on the show. Tim Buckley for making time for us from the Daily Advertiser. Jeff Morrison from Louisiana 811 One Call. Andrew Juge from the Saints Happy Hour podcast. And, of course, our next guest, our final guest of the show. His show's coming up next. You know him as the Cajun Kiwi, the one and only, Craig Perks. Perksy, how are you doing this morning, brother?
I am very well. How are you?
Doing well. Still trying to wrap my brain around what occurred in Augusta. The first, for me, Craig, watching it was probably the most impressive major win for me for Tiger since his last one when he was injured. He was hobbled. And he won the U.S. Open.
Yeah, 11 years ago.
11 years ago. This is the first time that he's won a major from coming from behind. They had the earlier tee times because of the weather coming through. He charges, he maintains, and he played some of his best clutch golf coming from behind for another major win to get that fifth green jacket. Your thoughts on what you saw with Tiger Woods winning the Masters?
Well, I think Nick Faldo summed it up perfectly after that seminal moment on 16 for Tiger. Faldo said he hunted down his prey, and he went in for the kill. He just basically just lined him up all the way through that back nine with the mistakes that Molinari and Koepka and Finau and Poulter made at 12. But for me, to if you go onto the Masters Twitter site, there's a 4-minute and 3-second video that encapsulates it all. That starts when Tiger taps in, the euphoria, the jubilation, the hugging of Sam and Charlie and his mother and his team and his agent, and then the walk, the screams of, like I said, jubilation. Then the generation of players from Xander Schauffele to Justin Thomas to Brooks Koepka to Poulter to Fowler to Bernard Langer sitting there with his green jacket on, Trevor Immelman. You know, we have a tendency to speak in hyperbole a lot, but it really was the greatest day in sports, maybe ever. Certainly one of the greatest comebacks ever. It's a story of redemption. I think this country loves a comeback story. Tiger Woods was defiled for 10-plus years, criticized, you know, and his life was for the public to see, vilified, you could say. I think that Tiger Woods has had a habit of rewriting the record books. On Sunday, he wrote the memories, and I think that's the best way to sum it up.
And for him, Craig, for me, is a lot of his fall from grace was his own doing.
Yep.
And for him to overcome that and own that and just come back from that is immensely impressive. The other thing that impresses me is that this is a guy 2 years ago at the Champions Dinner that says, I'm done. Mm. Like, he thought in his heart, he felt that he was done. Like, he was never going to be able to play at that high level. And for him to turn it around mentally, right, to get that confidence back, to feel like he could put on the red on Sunday and win a major is amazing to me, because that's only in 2 years. And once your confidence is shot in golf especially, or in any sport, but golf especially, it's hard to come back from that. And for him to go from I'm done to a Masters champion, that's immensely impressive to me.
Yeah, I think he overcame the doubt. You know, he said publicly that he'd never play again. His body had broken down. He's got the best hands probably in the history of golf, but you have to have that belief, and I think he always did. And Jack Nicklaus paid him a huge compliment throughout that entire back nine. While everyone else succumbed to the pressure and made the mistakes, Tiger missed it in all the right spots. It's just unimaginable that Tiger Woods is wearing the green jacket today. Quite remarkable.
Perksy, appreciate
you. Yep, you got
y'all it. Stay tuned. Keep it live and local right here for Perks of the Game. It's coming up next right here on 103.7 The Game. Y'all have a great day.